Hey, everybody. Welcome back to, well, finally, another episode of South Geek News. I'm here with Ben, of course. I actually did put out an episode last week. It was like less than 2 minutes that said, hey, this is the reason why we haven't done a show. Shit happens, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, we're back. We're going to try to get back into the groove of things. Honestly, I don't know where this puts us in the routine. I mean, it's sliding. It's wherever it is. This may be where we would have done
a
show.
Yeah, I think we put it off 3 weeks.
Yeah, so I think we're back in alignment again. The stars have aligned. Well, what have you been up to? I've got a story to tell you, but I'll wait and find out how your last 3 weeks have been.
My last 3 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
A little over 15 years ago, I had a vasectomy. And there's a baby in my house. A fun way to say it.
I got you beat. I had mine 24 years ago. But the point is.
Yeah. Point is.
And you now know and reaffirmed why you did
exactly.
It.
Yeah. So, yeah, my nephew is with us.
Mm-hmm.
Very long story.
Extenuating circumstances.
Yeah. If I told the whole story, I would forget at least 5 important parts because it gets around.
That convoluted, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And water was coming out of the wall this morning.
Excuse me?
Yeah. Yeah. So the wind was blowing the rain this morning.
Uh-huh.
And it was hitting a static window. And apparently right below, it's a triangle shape, the right triangle shape.
Okay.
So at the bottom corner, I guess that's where the water was getting in. It was coming down the wall and where it's the room, the theater room where the screen comes down. I got speakers in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So water was seeping out from the bottom of the speaker bezel.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good. Did it like damage the speaker or anything? Or
not that I know of. I got the speaker out this afternoon, but it was splashing on the window below that, hitting the windowsill and all over the floor.
Mm.
And I would have never seen it, but my son alerted me to it. So I'm just going to get up there and scrape, caulk around those windows. That's all I can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't seem like that'd be something that you'd want to get a file a claim on or anything.
No.
We had, not long after we moved here, we walked into the kitchen one morning and noticed that the paint was bubbling up on one of the walls. It's like, what the hell is this? Come to find out, that particular wall was right up under where the air handler was sitting upstairs, and the drain line was clogged. And so, unbeknownst to us, it was basically backing up and all of that was wet up there. And then it eventually seeped down and came down the wall. So we did file a claim. We had a contractor come in and they pulled all the cabinets away from the wall and they checked and there was no actual real damage to the sheetrock or anything. Hmm. They checked upstairs and of course AC guy come in and he blew the line out and all of that. Now I don't have to worry about that because when we replaced the AC upstairs, the unit, they kind of built this like closet type thing to put the air handler in and it's got a door, like a cabinet door. Well, none of the air handlers are that small anymore. So when they replaced that one, they had to haul that son of a bitch up into the attic. I remember that day. It took them, 14 hours. To do that install. And I felt for them lugging that thing up. So yeah, my upstairs air handler is in the attic on its side, not vertical, but on its side, but in a drain pan. And it's got the proper little sensor that, and it's done this once where if it fills up the pan to a certain level, the air handler just cuts off. It was because one day we noticed it was getting really warm up there. And I was like, what in the hell's going on? Got up there and looked. And the pan was you know, a couple of inches in water. And so I don't have to worry about that much anymore. But occasionally I do put these little green tablets that they gave me. But I'll go up there about once every 6 months because something in my brain will be like, need to check this out. And it'll be it'll be bone dry, bone dry. But yeah, is this the first kind of that type of damage you've had to your house? Not that it's necessarily damaged, but incursion, I should say.
Well, Hurricane Michael in 2018,
I think. Yeah.
We had just moved in and the hurricane came through, and my wife's like, let's see if we can, because there was a couple of shingles.
Mm-hmm.
And so she called the insurance. An adjuster came out, and I was like, yeah, let's see. So he did a little shingle test. He picked one up, and it's not pliable.
Mm-hmm.
It was the original roof, 20 years old.
Oh, yeah. It was time.
He's like, oh, new roof. I was like, really? So we got a new roof. While they were doing the roof, they had the roof. It rained.
Of course.
And water came down from a, where one of the valleys is, and mm-hmm. it just came in the house. Hey, what's that? And he's like, that's really nothing to worry about. We can paint over it if you want. Like, don't you dare paint over a fucking stain in the house.
Fix that shit.
No, I didn't have him fix it. I think it's still there. It's faded. The stain is faded, but we haven't painted that room yet.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't painted that ceiling. And then the Helene. When Helene came through, it was blowing the other way.
Yeah.
And it was just blowing water to a point. I think it was coming in through a vent.
Mm-hmm.
So just rain obeys gravity. It comes straight down.
Generally, unless your name is Helene.
Yeah. So
blows in through the soffits and
yeah,
everything.
Yeah. So other than that, yeah, that was been lucky.
Yeah, we had our roof replaced in 2013, somewhere in there. And the reason for that is we had a hailstorm come through, not the band.
Yeah.
But, and I didn't think anything about it. And of course, this is when this happens, you start having these roving roofers start going through the neighborhood.
You see yard signs everywhere.
Yeah. So this guy and his dad come rolling up. And he's like, you know, you want me to inspect your roof for any kind of hail damage? You know, it might be that you can get a new roof. And I was like, sure. And I mean, he was real nice. And so while he was checking stuff, his dad was basically talking to my wife and all. And he did that same kind of test. And then he looked at how much it beaten the hell out of mm-hmm. the shingles. And he's like, I think you need a new roof. And I said, well, as far as I know, this is the original one from 1990 when the house was built. And so he did a quote and he asked me, he was like, I noticed you got basic shingles. And he was like, do you want to upgrade to our architectural type shingles? And I said, do what now? I had no clue. So he's standing there and he points over to one of the neighbor's houses. And he said, you see their shingles? I went, yeah. He says, look at your shingles. I'm like, yeah. He said, those are architectural type, if I'm saying that correctly, mm-hmm. architect type or whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, those do look a little fancier. He goes, now you're going to have to probably kick in a little extra money for this. He said, if we just go back with the basic shingles, we're going to work it where, you know, you're not even going to have to worry about your deductible or anything. You know, it's just going to be covered. And I'm like, oh, okay. He said, but if you want those nicer shingles, I think it was cost me like another $700 or something. So I had to come out of pocket $700 for those shingles. The whole mm-hmm. thing was like 11 grand, but this was 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how much yours cost, but
22.
Yeah. You probably have more surface area too. And some weird ass angles and stuff.
I think it was probably a surcharge for the pitch of the roof.
Yeah.
Cause when I was doing that antenna, I could see why.
Yeah. Yeah. All I know is, man, his crew come in and they had the roof of the house, the building that we're in right now. I think it took them 4 days, 5 days, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were shitting and getting from sunrise to like 5 o'clock. I mean, if I wasn't up, I was up because they were banging on the damn roof. And they actually found some water damage where I think in this building, they replaced a section of the plywood. And I don't think there was anything in the main house. Listen to me, the main house. But, yeah, you know, I have an estate here.
Mm.
So, yeah, man. And I think it's a 25-year roof is what I got, which is standard. So that means that right before I die or I sell the house, I probably need to have it done again. And then it's going to be $65,000 for the roof.
Yeah, but it's okay. The Social Security will be paying you $80,000 a year.
If only. If only.
You don't know how worthless a dollar can get now, do you?
I mean, that's right. We'll be like we'll be like Third Reich Germany, where you literally had to roll in wheelbarrows full of money just to buy bread. Mm. You know, stuff like that. That was kind of rough. I mean, they were paying people by like the hour or several hours because of the fact that the money was becoming even more worthless. So it's like, here's a dollar. Well, now to make up for that dollar in 2 hours, I got to give you 10 more, you know, shit like that. I was like, ooh, that's rough. You know, no wonder the people turned a blind eye to what's his face. I wasn't going to say his name.
Who?
Hitler.
You said it.
I know I set you up for that. So I didn't really have that much going on in the last 3 weeks other than my continued trials and tribulations with TruVista, which finally about 90% came to an end last night. So, you know, Friday mornings are the mornings that Oriana and I go pick up the groceries from Walmart Supercenter, the main store. And we always take the Explorer. And now we've got these, Lee ordered these two compartment type things to make it easier for them to put the groceries in. So instead of me driving home going, hearing all this, shh, bam, shh, yeah, bam, it's all in that. So we go pick our groceries up and we're coming back. And the way I always go and the way I always come back is I go the back way through the industrial park. I go over I-75. I get down past Target, go down Jordan, hit 319, go through a residential area, come down Carpenter, and I come around because fuck trying to make that left turn on 82 into Walmart, not doing it on that side of Walmart because there's no light right there.
It doesn't take that.
It does because I've seen people stack up in that turning lane.
I've seen it too.
While I'm laughing my ass off as I'm turning right. But so anyway, we're coming back and I'm coming across I-75. And of course, there's typically either a GSP, Georgia State Patrol, or a county sheriff's deputy sitting there. County sheriff's deputy sitting there. I don't think anything about it. I go on down, I get to the stoplight, and it turns green. I go through the intersection. And as I'm approaching the railroad track right before you get to Exla Mesa, I notice he's right on my ass. And I'm like, what is going on here? You know, I didn't run the red light. I wasn't going too fast. What's going on? So we get over the tracks, and as soon as he makes it over the track, his lights go on. And I'm like, what the hell? And so I pull over kind of right there in front of Exla Mesa, and I'm like, well, let the window down. Go ahead and get my license out. Pull out my insurance card. He walks up. Very nice guy, younger guy, probably like I'd say between 25 and 30. And he's like, how you doing, sir? I'm like, I'm okay. You know, and I don't care how old you are and how young someone of the law happens to be. You will get nervous because it's like, what the fuck did I do?
Yeah.
And so he's like, do you know why I pulled you over? And you know, my daughter and I both are thinking, did we have a taillight out? What's going on here? And I said, no, sir, I have no idea. He goes, your tag's expired. I said, and I'm genuinely confused. And I'm like, well, that can't be right. I distinctly remember putting the sticker on. And he said, no, it's expired. I said, it says January 25, right? And he said, he looks at me, he goes, yeah, that's when it expired. And I went, oh, crap. And my dumb ass, I don't know why, but my brain, because my birthday's in January, it's always screwed me up that is the expiration.
Yeah.
Because I normally get the notification or the thing in the mail about the end of November, 1st of December. I go online, I pay it, I get it, I do it. So I'm like, I am so sorry. I said, I guess somehow or another, I just let this get past me. And he's like, okay, all right. He goes, well, hang on a second. I'll be right back. And I'm thinking, fuck.
It's going to make sure you don't have any warrants. That's all.
Yeah. So I tell Oriana, I'm like, well, this will be the first ticket I have gotten. Oh, God. The last ticket I got was a DUI in 1990.
That's the last ticket you got?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the last ticket I've got was a DUI in 1990. So he comes a few minutes later. You know, it's still nerve wracking. He walks back up and he said, I'm just going to give you a courtesy warning. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And he said, you know, just call the tax office, blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, yeah, no problem. You know, I'll go online and take care of this. So we get home, we get the groceries undone, of course, unloaded. And of course, you know, tell Lee, you know, our experience. And I'm like, well, I got to go take care of this right now. So I come out here and of course I cannot find the thing that I thought that they had sent to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they didn't. Maybe it's a cost cutting measure. They've decided they're no longer going to send that stuff. I don't know. So anyway, I found my old ones. And so I go online, put in my tag number, put in my driver's license number. I log in and right there in big red letters, expired. Because what I discovered, I kind of had a suspicion, but he told me they have license plate scanners in their cars. And so what happened was, as I went over, the license plate scanner hit my license, looked it up in the database and said, his tags are expired. And I was like, well, thank you for letting me know that little tidbit of information that nobody's ever said publicly that I knew of, that Tift County Sheriff's Department has license scanners, tag scanners in their vehicles.
No, I wasn't aware. I'm, you know, I don't have that many interactions with the police.
I generally don't either. And I like to keep it that way.
I know the city of Omega does.
Well, Tift County has them.
Because I was talking with the chief. I'm doing some work for them at one point. I don't remember what I was doing. But the chief had just gotten there. And
mm-hmm.
One thing he did was
he got those
the body cams and
yeah.
plate scanners. Apparently, he's increased the revenue quite a bit.
I imagine so.
Quite a bit.
I imagine so. Yeah, because the reason why he told me about that was I was like, you know, and being nervous, I was thinking, well, he saw the sticker on there. You know, the sticker has some relevance to this. That sticker is meaningless.
Yeah.
It's just
from a distance, you can see what color it is,
yeah.
which tells you what year that expires.
Right.
But if you got to get close to see, oh, yeah, that's.
But apparently it doesn't matter if that sticker's on there or not, because that's not what they go by. They go by if they look your tag up.
Right. Because you could make a sticker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And because I told him, because I was thinking, OK, I paid, but what's. Did I just fail to put the stickers on? And that's when he's like, no, 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 no. He said, it's in the database. You have not paid for those. I went, oh. So I learned some stuff last Friday.
Hmm.
And some stuff that I'm glad I now know, but I don't like the way I had to learn it.
Hey, it could have been worse.
It could have been worse. He could have given me a ticket.
Yeah, you could have got a robot.
Yeah.
To slap a fine on you
mm-hmm.
just for jiggles.
Yep. Or... And this is going to, there's a such thing as the color of my skin privilege too. So yeah,
white privilege is a thing.
It is. It is. And the guy, and this has nothing to do with anything whatsoever, but he was Hispanic.
Hmm.
I can't remember his last name, but I can't even pronounce it, but it's like Carlos or Car, but anyway, not trying to out the guy, but. It's not like I knew him, but like I said, he was very nice, very cordial. And I did my best to be just as cordial to him. I would have walked back there and entered the information into the laptop for him if he wanted me to. I wouldn't have cared. You know, I was like, just let me go. Just, I don't want to go to jail. You know, the worst shit starts running through your mind. It's like your tags are expired. Okay. Well, for that, we're sending you up to the big house for about, 60 days. What? No.
I got pulled over on 75, headed up to soccer one Saturday, and it was in a construction zone, and traffic was a little heavy. So I just wanted to get out of everybody's way. So I nailed it down a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I passed the cop and I saw him make a move, I was like, he's got me.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't cruising at 86. I was passing.
You're right.
But I saw him head out after me and I just took the next exit, stopped on the off ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And he pulled up behind me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew you got me.
Did he give you a ticket?
Yeah, but he knocked it down to like below super speeder.
Oh, okay, good.
He told me, he was like, that's super speeder. I was like, I thought super speeder was 20 miles an hour over. And he's like, unless it's 85 or better. 85 or better gets you super speeder.
Oh, and you were one over.
Yeah, blocked me at 86. I was like, what happened? You got to pass somebody with gusto. But oddly, I wasn't nervous.
Really?
Yeah. First ticket I ever got ruined my day. Like, I turned around and went back home.
Mm-hmm.
I was a teenager. I got caught in Berlin, Georgia. You ever heard of Berlin?
No.
It is spelled Berlin.
Berlin, but
pronounced Berlin.
Okay.
Sort of like Cairo and Cairo.
Cairo, yeah. Yeah, it's Cairo, Georgia here.
The other one? Vienna and Vienna.
Right, right. let's don't forget, we have Houston in Texas, but we have Houston County yeah. here in Georgia.
And former Representative Penny Houston.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. English, man. Hard.
Georgia.
Yeah, very. Yeah, well, I can definitely say that the night that I got my DUI, my next several days were ruined. So.
Yeah.
So was my car. I wrecked.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I wrecked the car. Not only did I damage my, I think I did about $3,000 damage to my car. And I did about $4,000 worth of damage to my friend's car because I ran into his car.
Mm.
Yeah. It was before Lee and I got married and there was some mixed signals between she and I and me and my cousin had been out drinking and driving that entire afternoon. We were drinking cherry vodka and had a case of Budweiser and I went insane. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. I blew a 0.24, 0.08 is the legal limit. I was edging up to alcohol poisoning is where I was headed.
So in Germany, you might not have even gotten in trouble.
Probably not. But I did. And then the only other time that I got a ticket, I've had two tickets in my life. Actually, that one may have been before the DUI, now that I think about it. I was going to visit an ex-girlfriend at college. And, I have forgotten which college she went to and where that was at. Okay, never mind. It doesn't matter. But to get there, you go through... on your journey there and back, you go through one of these small hole-in-the-wall towns where if you're not careful, the speed limit goes from 55 to 25 like that.
Yeah.
And so going up there, I had no problem. Coming back, I was coming back at about 4 a.m. And before I could register that the speed had dropped from 55 to 45 to 35, I was still cruising at 55 through mm-hmm. there and lit me up, pulled me over, asked me, of course, you've been drinking, boy? No, sir, I have not been drinking, which I had not. And he's like, well, he gave me a ticket and they took my license, of course. And this is one of those small towns where the sheriff is also the judge. So my mom and my first cousin had to go and get my license for me. Because I had to work. So while I was at work, she and my cousin drove there, paid the fine and got my license back. That's the only two times I've ever had a ticket, any kind of a moving violation ticket was that one and the DUI. And of the two, the DUI was the worst. They never took my license on that one, but they took me in, fingerprinted me. And by the time I was... they were finished with that. My mom and dad were up at the sheriff's office and got on the phone with the sheriff to make sure that he could write a check for my $350 bail to get out of jail. So I never actually stayed in jail.
When I was um, when I lived in Adel, one time I fixed my brother's laptop. And so I took it back to him. He lives in Brunswick. So between Adel, to get from Adel more directly to Brunswick, mm-hmm. you take, I can't even remember the name of the road. You go from Adel through the woods to Waycross. And part of that is Highway 122.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly swamp, extremely boring.
Mm-hmm.
You go 20 miles, you don't see a car. You begin to wonder if you're going to see an alligator sitting inside. That's the kind of road this is.
Suddenly you're transported down to Florida somewhere.
Yeah. So I had my brother's laptop in the trunk on the motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm making time. This is a terrible trip. I hate this road.
Yeah.
It's when we used to take that to go to North Carolina, our least favorite part was the first 2 hours through the woods to get to Waycross and then 82 to Brunswick.
Wow.
The rest of the trip was fine. Anyway, so I'm getting with it. I'm on the motorcycle. It's like Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I pass a trooper. And I see him turn around and I just pull over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know they're going to pull me over. I usually am stopped,
just bike off
before he gets there.
Mm-hmm.
So he, you know, he did the thing and he saw my name. And he's like, you know, Trooper Rayburg over somewhere?
Nope.
He's like, well, I'm sure you'd like to. like I'm calling a favor of a family member if I knew the guy. Like, not really. He's like, why are you going so fast? I was like, this road's boring. And I was just trying to get it over with.
No reason to lie.
I figured he would understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And it apparently was a valid excuse because I got a warning.
There you go.
I think I was doing like 72.
And that's 55. A 55?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was on a motorcycle and the road was empty except for the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
No one passed us while he had me pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice.
That's where you need something like the Autobahn over here where certain roads are just like, okay, there's no speed limit on this.
I've heard that there are some roads in Nevada like that. There's no posted limit.
That does sound familiar.
But you can probably get pulled over for reckless driving.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you're doing
120.
I would let 120 go if it's empty.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you're doing like 180.
Yeah, if you have a vehicle that will do that.
Well, if you're doing like 140 in a Hyundai, you probably should get pulled over.
You probably should rethink your life.
I've got this habit of watching police dash cam videos on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen Hyundais do some incredible things.
Hey, I'm not knocking Hyundai. It's a good car.
Well, they've been in the States over 30 years now. Mm-hmm. It took Toyota a while to get their footing.
Yeah.
When the first Toyotas came over, I think it was in the 50s, they couldn't get up the hills in San Francisco.
Well, you have to stop and think all the way through the 70s too, whenever we started having the compact and the subcompact cars.
Because of the
gas prices. Everything that was coming from Japan was complete and utter shit. They did not have good quality control. They were making things as cheaply as they could. By the time we got into the 80s, they started, and I'm not saying this is the reason why, but some of this I know because my dad worked for General Motors, and they started doing partnerships with like GM and Ford and places like that, and they actually started making a lot of their vehicles over here in GM plants and things like that. And that's not to say that their plants in Japan are crap, you know.
Yeah, they've improved over time. They've improved. Right. And Hyundai and Kia, they improve every year.
Oh yeah. Well, there was a while there that, and it, some could probably still argue it to this day, that the Japanese car manufacturers still make a superior product over American car manufacturers. I don't know if I'll go that far, but in the 80s, I mean, Mazda, Toyota, the truck of choice in the late 80s was a Toyota truck.
Yeah.
Everybody had those fucking things.
I had a Nissan truck, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which used to be Datsun.
Yeah.
When they were Datsuns, they were not good vehicles, but, you know, somewhere along the line, they changed the name.
Mid-80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what's cool, one of my clients being a Nissan dealership, in the former owner, in his office, there was this big picture that had every vehicle of note that they had made from the time that they were Datsun to when they were Nissan, and like their race cars and all this other kind of stuff, kind of giving you a journey of how they started.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool. I wish I'd have taken a picture of it. I don't know if it's still in there or not. His door was shut whenever I was there last night. Cause I mean, he's passed away, but yeah. I don't, they're using that office or not. But I mean, I really loved those Toyota trucks because my girlfriend at the time, her brother had one and it was a stick shift and I got to drive it and I was like, man, this is the shit. Cause it had the roll bar on the back and you know, and it was a 4x4. So it was picked up a little bit and I was like, yeah, that's what I want. And we're talking about a vehicle at the time. It didn't cost you more than $10,000. And that was expensive, but still, it was more affordable.
Yep.
Because when I bought my Ford Ranger was a 1995 model, brand new from the place in Adale, Ford place in Adale. Mm-hmm. That Sunbelt?
Cook County Ford.
Cook County. Okay, yeah, Cook County Ford. Traded in Lee's, I forget what model, 1985 or something. Type 10 Cavalier. It was one of those deals where it was like, if you can drag it or drive it, we'll give you $1,000 off. So her sunroof and all had been leaking for a while there. So anytime that it rained, I'd have to put towels, otherwise my ass would get wet. So my dad and I both went down there and I was like, I just want a basic, simple truck. First time I'd ever owned a standard transmission in a vehicle. Thing was like $10,900 in 1995.
Yep.
You cannot get a brand new vehicle for less than $20,000 anywhere in the United States.
I looked at a side-by-side today, $19,000.
Yeah, yeah. It's wild. Because I started looking at vehicles a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, I'd like to get a Ford Escape. Because I want something, I still want an SUV style, but I don't want to go so far as to buy an Explorer because I was thinking about replacing my my car.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, shit, cheapest I can get one of these things is like $34,000. And I was looking at the hybrids too, because they have those in hybrids.
Yeah.
And the hybrid's like another $5,000. And I was like,
it's a big battery.
Yeah. I mean, I understand, but I was like, okay, I guess I need the weight, you know.
You know, for the number of miles you drive in a year, you might be interested in a good candidate for Tesla Model Y. Because you can lease one for like $300 a month.
You see that door right there? I encourage you to walk out it, get in your truck, and go home.
No, you can lease one. I was looking at, I don't know, a couple of months ago. But they had a lease deal. It was like $5,000 down at signing or whatever. But
yeah, I'm not
like
doing
$300 a month for a lease. I was like, okay,
leasing is still not good.
We can't lease vehicles. That's just. I bought this truck in June last year. Got 19,000 miles on it now.
See, I definitely do not put as many miles on a vehicle. I could pull up my report, but I think I might put 5,000 a year.
Yeah.
On my car. Yeah. But I don't have clients outside of Tift County. Well, take that back. I got one in Nashville.
You don't have a kid in soccer either.
No. So all of my mileage on my car is to clients here or I go to Nashville. The Explorer goes and gets groceries. And then occasionally Lee will go to eat with a friend of hers. That's it. We don't go anywhere. And I like it like that.
Hey, that's fine. And you're not one to care whether your car is brand new or not. And,
no.
And that's sort of the selling point on leasing. It's a low monthly cost.
Yeah.
And in 2 or 3 years when the lease is up, you just lease another one.
Here's what I'm looking at. And this is the reason why I'm not hell-bent on doing it right now because I'm not at the right age. It's one of these things that I read. I may have shared this with you before or talked about it. But when you get around about the age 60, right, as you're approaching retirement age, it is recommended that that is when you buy your very last brand new vehicle, because that will probably be the last vehicle you will ever own before you die. And knowing that we've got a 2003 Ford Explorer that still works, still runs. I keep it, you know, take it, get its oil changed, get everything. Spent $2,000, a little over $2,000 getting the air conditioner fixed and all of that and some oil leaks and stuff. My Focus is a 2013. So figure by the time I'm 60, which is 5 years from now, we buy a brand new vehicle, whether we trade in one of these or not, that'll be the last vehicle I'll ever buy. So, you know, in 5 or 7 years, however long I have to finance the stupid thing, you know, that'll be it. It will not be a fucking Tesla, I can tell you that. You couldn't pay me, you know, to drive a Tesla.
Sometimes, Donovan, I wish you would just tell me how you really feel.
I know. I'm very guarded in that aspect. I know. How about we talk about some tech shit?
Well, let's have it.
Okay. All right. First thing on the docket. Some of these may have aged out, but we'll see. Our beloved, or I should say your beloved Twitter, also known as X.
Zitter.
Yeah. So this is a move that is reminiscent of something that they've done in the past, where they would either block or they do some kind of action against like Facebook links or Instagram links or Substack links. I remember there was a while there that if you tried to put a Substack link in there, it just wouldn't, you couldn't click on it or it'd give you an error.
Some of the Reddit forums are banning links to X.
Okay.
In that, you know, same kind of regard.
Right. So what they're doing right now is they're blocking signal.me links. And of course, Signal is an end-to-end encrypted chat program, very similar to WhatsApp.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, it's what my family and I use for our family chat. And there's some things that we say in there that the other day, Tyler said, I'm really glad that this has end-to-end encryption because we might be going to jail otherwise. And I'm like, no, of course not. We didn't say anything like that, you know? We didn't wish anybody harm, which we didn't, actually. We did not.
You're just planning a kidnapping at all?
Yeah, just a simple kidnapping. Not even across state lines, so that way the FBI doesn't have to get involved. Yeah. That was a joke, okay?
Although it would be, for somebody you don't like, it would be just another bit of shade if you just buried him in Alabama.
Yeah, I like the way you keep
that soil fertile.
Yeah. Oh God, we're going to prison.
Nah.
Mm. So anyway, it seems like, I don't know if they're still doing this or not, but they were blocking those links. So that whenever you would try to link something, because I noticed this on Blue Sky, there's a lot of journalists that are using Signal, and they will post stuff on Blue Sky that says, hey, if you're one of these fired federal employees or whatever, we'd like to hear from you. Here's my Signal handle.
Right.
And used to, Signal was 100% tied to your telephone number, but last year they made it where you could actually change that over to a handle, so you could hide your telephone number. That way you didn't have to give it out. So what it's saying is it will generate an error, or it'll flag it as spam, harmful content, or malware, which then triggers that error message saying, hey, this is potential spam, this could be harmful content, et cetera, et cetera. And the funny thing is Signal owns apparently two domains, signal.me and signal.org. You can link signal.org, but apparently there's no error. But if you do a signal.me, which is the actual, like if you share something off of Signal, that's what it is, it will then block the access to it. So,
yeah, I did hear about that. Been a while.
Yeah, I think this came out around about February 18th or 20th or somewhere.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I could understand that one reason that they wouldn't want journalists reaching out via X.
Why?
That just sounds like something that the hands in control would want.
I mean, I understand why. I
can't say why, but it's the only legitimate reason. Well, yeah, that makes sense. That kind of.
Actually?
Unless there was actual evidence of malware being spread via Signal.
I know. Do I know what I'm about to say with 100% certainty? Of course not.
No, but this is the internet. Your mm-hmm. voice is going over the internet, so say it.
Okay.
Then it may be true.
Knowing who owns Zitter, mm-hmm. which is Elon Musk, knowing who also is running but not running the douche department, because that's what I call it. I don't call it Doge. It's the douche department. And knowing all the pushback that that SOB is getting, and knowing that you've got journalists that are using encrypted communications such as Signal saying, hey, reach out to me and this is how we can communicate and you can tell me the bullshit that Elon's doing. Of course, he would immediately look at that and go, kill those links. You know, I don't need people doing that kind of stuff.
That's what I was saying.
Okay. All right. I want to make sure we're on the same page.
It's plausible that somebody could think that and make that call.
Yeah. Knowing that he's done this kind of crap before, where, I mean, like, he didn't want Facebook links on there. He didn't want any of the competition, which legally he's allowed to do that. This is not a First Amendment issue. You know, it's a thing that most people get confused when they're like, oh, censorship, you can't censor me and all. No, 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 no. That's not First Amendment, you dumbass. Now, if the government decides to do it, that's a First Amendment issue.
Yeah.
But if a private or publicly traded company is doing it, that's their...
That's policy.
That's policy. And that, you know, you're in their playground, you know, so, but I still don't go on there. So. And I mean, honestly, Blue Sky, I love Blue Sky, but I did an episode of Call Me Donovan today. And I was talking about how to reconcile our mental health while trying to still stay up to date with what's going on in the world. It's like, you know, I do not watch State of the Union addresses. I don't care who the president is, but I want to keep up with it. But it, at the same time, it's this nonsense of, it's like this level of despair. And though I love Blue Sky basically has become a liberal echo chamber. That's all that's on there.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. And so I love the information I get off of there, but there's no contradictory viewpoints.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's contradictory viewpoints, and then there's just dumbass viewpoints, which most MAGA, heavily MAGA, cultish people are the dumbass viewpoints. If you happen to be someone who supports Republican and conservative ideologies, but don't think that Trump is the second coming of Christ, we might can have a conversation.
You and I are sitting right here.
Exactly. But if you're one who's like, oh, his shit doesn't stink and everything that he's done since he's been in office since January 20th is... That is absolute madness, and we cannot have a conversation, you know?
Yeah. I Trump is not one to be worshipped. I really can't see it that way.
No.
Any president would never hold that.
No.
That status in my mind.
I liked Barack Obama. I thought he was cool. I thought he was hip. He made some mistakes. I never put him on a pedestal.
No.
I mean,
I would like to have a beer with him.
Yeah. I mean, he was unique. It was, it was fresh. And not to mention, talk about an essay on finally coming out of dark times, or at least we thought, by having a black president, you know? Yeah. So anyway.
I heard a woman on NPR in an interview. Maybe it wasn't NPR. Anyway. She was making an argument that Barack Obama is not black.
What color is he?
He's not black because he's not descended of slaves. And this was I believe this was an African-American woman saying this. And then it just comes down to semantic. Black to you is someone, a black American, descended from slaves. But Barack Obama was born in Hawaii. His father is
Kenyan.
Kenyan.
Yeah.
His mother is...
I forget.
Not descended of slaves either.
No.
So that's
that makes no sense. That fails the logic test. Nobody ever said that to be considered black, you had to be descended of. She's wrong. And I'm a white guy telling this black woman she's wrong.
No, I just thought, I didn't mean to start an argument. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
I was like, every time somebody says, oh, you know, we elected a black president, I think of that woman saying, yeah,
she's
he's like, not black.
He's not black. What is he? Oh my goodness.
I thought that was interesting.
Okay. All right. Well, on to something else that's not logical. Windows 11's latest update breaks File Explorer. Apparently, there's no way to avoid it. So if, and because this is stuff that affects you and I, definitely, if you see update KB5051987, do not install it because it has caused major problems for users. They report that File Explorer becomes unresponsive after installing the patch. Isn't that just Windows 11?
I think Windows 11 starts that way.
Yeah. The update was meant to bring security improvements and new features such as OneDrive integration, which is similar to Apple's handoff and enhancements like remembering previously open tabs in File Explorer, which I do like. I think we've talked about that. I like the tabs in File Explorer in Windows 11. But instead of improving the experience, it apparently has broken basic functions like opening folders, saving files, and downloading documents. Those seem very important to me.
Seems like it would impact productivity. Yeah.
Yeah. 2025, year of the Linux desktop. So some users are also struggling to install the update at all. Okay, well, that's good. Don't. The process freezes and eventually fails. Other issues, we have glitches like taskbar animations, cameras, and more. Taskbar animations? Okay. I didn't realize we had animations there, but I try to turn off all the animations. It is a mandatory security update, so there's no way to permanently avoid it. The only current solutions are to uninstall the patch and pause updates temporarily or wait for Microsoft to release an official fix.
Now, that has been a couple of weeks ago, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm about to try to pull up the article. That was February the 16th. So I have not heard anything that says that they have fixed this problem.
I haven't heard any reports of the problem. But my updates my updates go 2 weeks after the release.
Yeah.
So if it's broken and they pull it, we've never installed.
Okay. Well, just be on the lookout for it.
Yeah. I probably should do an audit and see if
I want to say that
I don't have a lot on Windows 11 either.
I still have the majority on 10. I try to keep it that way if possible, but I'm running into where sometimes it just doesn't make sense, especially if it's like, now if it's an older system where I image it and put it on a new machine, that's Windows 10.
Yeah.
If it's a new machine where I don't need to image it because there's all kinds of crazy software that I'd have to reinstall, usually I'll go with Windows 11, much to my chagrin. But I probably have less than 10 or 15 PCs that are actually running Windows 11 for clients. Most of them are still Windows 10.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to get to October.
Yeah.
Sooner or later.
Yeah.
And I was planning on doing most of mine over the summer just because of my clients' schedules. They're less busy in the summer. And we replaced most of the machines in 2019.
So you actually going to be replacing the machines? Okay.
Yeah.
So not trying to do it.
Upgrading through attrition. There's no way I'm going to do an in-place upgrade for some shit that already worked.
No, I understand. All right. Starbuck. What am I? Battlestar Galactica. Starlink doubled its subscriber base in 1 year, but can it keep up with users' demands? So, of course, Starlink, unless you've been living under a rock, we know what that is. It's SpaceX satellite internet service. So it doubled its global user base in 2024. It went from 2.3 million to over 4.6 million subscribers in the United States. It now serves around 1.4 million, primarily in the rural areas. And that's because, well, you can't get anything else there. Yeah. Of course, Starlink has been a vital solution. Matter of fact, I think I've mentioned this before, but last year, Twit closed down their studio. And so Leo broadcast out of his attic space now that they redid, and they use Starlink as a backup internet connection. I think he's got Comcast as the primary, but he's even mentioned that during one of the recording of This Week in Tech, the flagship show they do on Sunday, they actually had to do it over Starlink, which to me was impressive because it's all video. So They did all of that over Starlink, even though, if I remember correctly, what I read, the average speed of most Starlink locations around the United States is less than 300 megabit.
I don't remember what it was when I tested mine.
Yeah.
But it's been rock solid for my friend.
Yeah. If it weren't owned by the asshole, I have to keep trying to separate that. I mean, would I, if I found myself out in the middle of nowhere, let's say for whatever reason I was relocating, there's absolutely.
And you had to get online and renew your tags.
Starlink would be an option. Of course, I'm not sure how I would get online to order the equipment, but you know what I'm saying. I don't plan on moving anywhere where I don't have fiber, but you never plan some of these things. So, let's see. Okay, so let's talk about the speed. It says, despite its rapid expansion, concerns remain about whether Starlink can handle increased demand while meeting performance expectations. The FCC's broadband standard is 100 megabit down and 20 megabit up, but Starlink's average U.S. speeds have consistently fallen below that, with recent tests showing around 65 down and 10 up. Starlink's failure to consistently meet these benchmarks led the FCC to deny its nearly $900 million in rural broadband funding. I remember when they got that. That probably pissed Elon off.
It did.
Elon has disputed these claims about slow speeds, but the official data hasn't backed that up. Experts are questioning if Starlink can scale without compromising service quality, even as some regulators suggest the company could rejoin government subsidy programs in the future. So for right now, Starlink still remains a lifeline for underserved areas, but faces growing scrutiny over its long-term performance. You know, that was always a problem you had, even with like Usenet. And before it was Usenet, it was DirectPC and all of that. Of course, those are standard satellites. These are LEOs that he's using. So, but that's the reason why they did their capping thing that they did with Usenet was people, you would get throttled after a certain amount of data.
Yeah.
I remember whenever I first got it, I got the one way where you had to have a dial-up connection for the uplink. And I thought I was in high cotton when I was getting 40 megabit downloads. And this was 98, 99, somewhere in there. Yeah. And the quote modems were these two big honking, look like DVD players or something that were stacked on top of one another. And you had to do this funky salt. I had to use a special software on a Windows machine to be able to share the connection to the rest of the computers. on the network. So, oh, I guess I put this one in here twice. I forgot it was in here. Okay. When's the last time you used Skype?
I was going to ask you the same thing.
I know exactly the last time I used Skype.
It had to be before 2005.
The last time?
Yeah.
My last time was 2015.
How did I do the remote? How did we do the podcast like in 2011, 12?
I think that was Skype. Okay. Did we do video or did we just do audio?
Just audio.
I still think it was Skype because Discord wasn't out at that point. And only other options would have been TeamSpeak because I know I ran a TeamSpeak server for a while.
It had to be Skype then. Yeah. So yeah, 2012.
Last time I did it was 2015. And that's because I did an interview with the Thinking Atheist, Seth. And that's what we needed to do video at the time because Discord had been out, but it still wasn't what everybody was using. He still used Skype. I had Skype. And so that's how we connected to do the interview. But that was the last time I actually used Skype. And it was for that special use case. But now you can use Teams because Microsoft is officially retiring Skype in May of 2025.
I want to say the numbers on who's still using Skype.
I know. I mean,
I would imagine it's just mostly folks in Europe.
I know that back whenever I was from 2013 to about 2015, when I was working at CPI, I had a chat going with Sam, another friend. I don't think you were in that one, but that's how we all communicated is I'd be sitting at my desk and we'd do Skype for chat. It was a group chat. And then, of course, eventually Discord became a big thing and we all just gravitated over to Discord, which I think Discord in part helped to kill Skype. Not to mention the fact that Microsoft started putting more resources into the Teams team.
I really thought the Skype voice and video part was just that those technologies and whatever IP went into Team.
I think it did. I think it did. I've never really used Teams for that kind of stuff. I mean, anytime it's become like, well, whenever we had to do the remote for this show, Discord.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of bittersweet because I remember in the heyday of Twit, they had created this thing they called the Skypeosaurus. And that is how they were able to do. It was the brainchild of one of their employees there. And they had like these four machines and they had them routed in such a way and had all the audio and the video routed so that they could bring in a guest. This guest would come in on Skypeosaurus 1. This one would come in on Skypeosaurus 2. And they were able to mix all that stuff together with people in studio. And it was just like, that was the shit. Because, we were all these newbie podcasters going, how do you do this stuff? And they're sitting there going, of course, they had the purse to be able to do it.
Yeah.
But it was like, and now all of that's gone. They use Zoom. Yeah. And some other software for video mixing. But it's like, when ICQ got shut down, it's like, yeah, I remember the heyday. One of the
first chat programs I used.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool because I could see the letters as they were typed. It wasn't just line by line. It was
character by character. I still remember my ID, 154006.
Yeah, I'm not going to remember that. I do remember, I don't know what I was doing, but I guess it was around the time I was using the ICQ to chat with. Wow. I had just moved to the barracks, it was online one night and my CD drive opened. It ejected.
Oh, yep.
I'm going to turn this off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then years later, I read about how to do that. But I never did it.
It tickled me because I don't know why, but I had that, my ID ingrained. And then years later, to see, that's a 6-digit ID.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were into like 7, even 8 digits, I think, the number of people that were using that thing. It was started by an Israeli company or a group of programmers in Israel.
No. But
yeah, it became really damn popular. And then, Microsoft Messenger, they came in. Yeah. And then Yahoo had their thing. And of course, AIM still, AOL still had their thing. They spun it out where it was outside of the actual AOL program. Everybody was jockeying into trying to get this little chat things going. But that's like Discord. I've seen some chatter. It was talking about, the Cory Doctorow came up with the term inshittification. Yeah. He was talking about how everything on the internet gets inshittified. So the inshittification of the internet. And I saw some commentary today in some of the Discords I'm in. It's talking about, that at some point they feel like the Discord's probably going to get inshittified. So what's the next thing, Because apparently there's a new draft. There's an IRC V3 that's supposed to be like the shit, solve a lot of the problems that V1 and V2 of IRC had. But it apparently is just taking a long damn time to ever get it going and ratified. So.
I think it's going to come down to... I would be in favor of it come down to data silos, the open source server software, self-hosted. And you can kind of open up rooms on your own server for public chat, whatever, meeting rooms, meet me here. And then you can have sort of a private section where invite only, kind of thing. And of course, maybe someone to sponsor a mobile app. For it.
Yeah, there was a couple of years ago, more than a couple, probably about 4 or 5 now, and I cannot remember the name of it, but I came across this open source software to run your own chat server, and it was slick. I played around with it. I was trying to use it for some of the other tech people that were adjacent to my own clients. They worked with some of my clients, but they didn't do the same thing I did. So we collaborated together. And so I ran it and it had a lot of bells and whistles, and I got away from it, and they did the smart thing. They were like, hey, I remember getting an email at some point saying, hey, we're retiring the open source part of this. We're now going 100% commercial. You can still use this stuff, but it's going to, even if you want to host it on your own server, it's going to be X amount of dollars per year or whatever. And I was like, that kind of defeats the whole purpose of the open source, but okay. But it was great. I just cannot remember the name of it, and it pisses me off. but it was pretty good. You know, we tried that. I have found that between the chatting that we do, Discord works better than anything else. The chat that comes with the Synologies, it's crap. I mean,
it was useful enough. But I think Discord connected. Just has more features, and yeah, if your service goes down or your Synology has a kernel panic or something, Discord's still up.
Yeah. I mean, anytime I have to do, if there's a new version of DSM, I need to update the Synology. Well, it's down for 10 minutes. I mean, the chat's down for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that'll be that time that's like, oh, I need to tell Ben something. No. So I'm glad we gravitated over to using Discord more because I'm in it all the time because I follow GOG's Discord. Got several other ones that I check in from time to time. I'm mainly just hang out in GOG's, but. And then just for direct messages between us, it works. And Sam's on it, so I can get him and all of that. All right. Elon Musk staffer created I'll have to say it this way, Doge AI assistant for making government less dumb. Doge, the douche department. So they developed a custom AI chatbot powered by XAI's Grok 2 to support the so-called Department of Government Efficiency. I did not write so-called. That was ChatGPT summarizing it so-called. So I guess it might have got it from the actual article. Maybe they said it. So it's an effort aimed at reducing government waste. The chatbot, publicly available until recently, was hosted on a site linked to Christopher Stanley, who works at both SpaceX and the White House. It's unclear whether this tool was actively used by the Department of Government Efficiency or was simply experimental. The AI assistant claimed to help government staff identify inefficiencies using 5 key Doge principles focused on simplifying processes and cutting unnecessary bureaucracy. In practice, the chatbot applied these principles to suggest eliminating layers within agencies like USAID and cited leaders like Margaret Thatcher and Lee Kuan Yew as role models for efficiency. Margaret Thatcher? Okay.
She was before my time.
I mean, I remember she and Reagan were like that. However, the chatbot also showed common AI flaws like hallucinations, generating fake names for Doge staff and offering strange suggestions such as outfitting USAID with drones and wearable tech. Doge is reportedly exploring other AI tools for government use, but questions remain about potential conflicts of interest since XAI could profit from government use of its technology. After the story gained attention, the chatbot was taken offline. Well, of course it was. Yeah, that bothers me as much as we play around, dabble, use AI. Something that was said, I think it was by Speaker Johnson when he was talking about Social Security and how there's $50 billion a year in waste in Social Security and Medicaid and all. But now they have the algorithms to weed that shit out. And it's like, yeah, they're saying without saying that they're using Elon's XAI Grok to go through all of these departments to weed out waste and fraud when we know clearly that it hallucinates.
Well, I've heard stories of guys who have zero computer science knowledge, no background, no programming experience or education, creating full-on apps using AI, using GPT and Claude and
do you think that's a good thing?
Well, I've heard stories that some guy's Python project got so big and then all of a sudden there were dependency cascades, failures, and and he was reaching out on somewhere going, I don't know what to do.
Because you didn't write
somebody,
any of it.
Somebody needs to be able to go through that and verify, you know, whether it's correct or verify that that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have XAI, some kind of agent, comb through government files and programs and take an analysis, just make an analysis of it, not to return a decision on what to do, but to go, hey, I found this.
Right.
When that can be done so much faster than 3,000 humans pouring through paperwork, you just have an agent tie things together and look at things. Hey, maybe this is less efficient than it could be.
Yeah.
And then send it to the team and to for verification. So there's sort of a automation with human validation.
Right.
I can see that being
okay.
a very good way to go about it.
I think I can agree with that.
Not turning it over to an agent going, hey, fix all this. Because if it does hallucinate and it finds a perfectly tuned, well-oiled machine and sends it up there, hey, do we need this? The humans can go, try better.
Yeah, so the AI doesn't come back and say, so we've been going through the Social Security database, and here's a suggestion I have. Anybody that's over the age of 85, we need to utilize drones, and we need to equip them with...
wearable tech?
Well, with certain militaristic armaments. And this is how we reduce the dependency on the Social Security Trust Fund, is we send these drones out and we just eliminate these people. You know, I would like, if that is a recommendation from the AI, that there is a human going, no, maybe we shouldn't do that. Yeah. Maybe we should move it up to about 90 and then we'll, no, I'm kidding. Yeah.
No, that's a bad idea. No, yeah. We don't want recommendations. We just want anomalies or, you know, see bottlenecks in a process or just whatever it can logically find and just return it and go, hey, found this.
Yeah.
And then when you make those decisions, you cut that layer off, have it run again and look for how the process works now and look for more inefficiencies in that. And then just sort of get recommendations and a quicker analysis, because our government does not move fast at all.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that there's not waste and inefficiencies in the federal government. I mean, there's just
waste and inefficiency in my company.
Yeah. Hell, there's waste and inefficiencies in my brain.
It's everywhere.
But what I'm curious about is, did they use AI, or would AI have been more helpful when they decided to comb through the Social Security database and wigged out because they didn't understand that, no, there weren't people 150 years of age getting Social Security checks, that it was a COBOL element issue where they didn't actually put in initially the date of death? Because that's what happened, is when there was no date, it reverted back to 1875.
Well, yeah, the epoch or the,
yeah, it was an epoch that was decided whenever they developed the COBOL programming language. And so instead, you know, Elon and his team come out and go, look at this fraud and waste in Social Security. Whereas maybe an AI agent could have actually come through that and come back and go, no, it looks fine.
Now, these people's, you know, there's a field called deceased.
Yeah.
And
it's blank.
For everybody who's somehow showing over 114 years old, deceased equals one.
Yeah.
So through this other process, that stops them from getting a Social Security check. So there may be this many people showing over this age, but they don't get checks.
Yeah. Which also, that was something else that was actually pointed out by one of the administrators, former administrators, was the lack of understanding of someone like Elon Musk when he looks at this data, or Big Balls, or whoever it is that's looking at this stuff, is that was a list of Social Security numbers. That was not a list of who was getting Social Security checks. That was not the same list. But they pulled that out and said, look at this fraud. So, and, you know, dumbasses will buy that. So I'm fine with using AI like you suggest. Let's do an analysis. Let's spit the data out and humans verify it and go, no, this doesn't look right. And then they dig into it and go, oh, okay. You know, AI hallucinated, or this is something we need to fix. I'm not against what I can't say. I'm going to actually admit that I'm going to say this, but Elon pointed out that in the Treasury, they have an issue where they didn't use payment codes. So it was hard to categorize where certain payments, what they were for. And I'm like, you know, as a layperson, if I had been given access to that and I had to comb through that data and I was like, well, what was this check for? And you couldn't tell me, I would have an issue with that.
Yeah.
So there are things that can be done. It's just the way they're doing them is not the right way of doing it.
Well, the way we're hearing about it and the details that are put out there and the details that are omitted, that really matters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure all of the information was on the screen, but we were only told about one or two fields.
Well, but I hear what you're saying, but there's also stuff like what just happened to, you know, Manna Nutrition over in Fitzgerald, Georgia.
Yeah.
Okay. They got their $50 million contract cut last week.
Yep.
It got reinstated this Sunday because people are just arbitrarily going in and going, kill this one. And that's where I have an issue with this. It's like, look, you want to go through. And again, not to make this a political podcast, but there's technology involved in this. There was already a method for being able to weed this stuff out. And it was called Inspector General.
Yeah.
That's what the Inspector's General position was, to look through this, file a report with Congress so Congress could go, we need to do something about this, instead of just having a hatchet man going through like, well, I'm not entirely sure what USAID is doing, but I'm pretty confident they're sending $50 million for condoms to Hamas, which is not true.
No, it was peanut butter.
Yeah, it was peanut butter. So, yeah, if we can use AI to do this a little better, but here's the problem. I don't trust Elon's AI. I don't trust Elon. And the fact that he's there doing it is a conflict of interest for me. There, I said it. I'll move on.
So, yeah, using AI as an accelerant to speed things up.
To set it on fire?
Yeah. So the current process is the IG comes in and goes, oh, this needs a change. And he submits a report to Congress. Now, between the AI's or the IG's inspection and somebody in Congress seeing that report, how long is that?
I don't know.
Probably weeks, at least. And then, how long did it take for Congress to make a decision on it?
I don't know, and I'm not entirely sure about the process. I don't know if he does report that to Congress or if he reports
either
it to
way,
somebody
if
else.
If it depends on Congress making a thing happen,
yeah, that's true.
Then this is never going to happen. Not till the next president is in office. And that's why it's more important to kind of do it this way and actually get the change made and just rip off the Band-Aid and be done so something can be done. I've never been through any presidency where a thing actually happens and the world changes. Fucking nothing changes because the houses of Congress are always against the president for some reason. And so the president wants something. Congress is like, fuck you. You can't do shit. And then Congress wants something. And the president goes, nip.
Yep.
Veto, motherfucker. So then it's just back and forth. And you see people on the news, you know, you see a senator outside on the steps talking about making his case. When we could have just had a meeting yesterday or a quick call yesterday and made a decision, let's be done.
I mean,
and why does everything have to go through committee? And I mean, so you have so many fucking hands involved.
Yeah.
And they all got to be greased. So
that's fair.
Favors done, this and that. And no, it would just, we would never see change. I think this is world changing. It's playing out like a fucking comic book, but it's something.
Oh, it's world changing. All
it's
right.
Something. And at least it's not nothing. So I'm not a fan of everybody doing all this and whatnot. I'm not a fan of all the people involved is what I mean. But I'm glad something is happening, and it's happening fast, and we've never seen change like this before, and I'm really curious to see what it's like when the dust settles.
I mean, they could have, I guess I would have been all right if they would have done this initiative and said, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do something unprecedented. We've never done this before.
I think they did.
But Elon Musk did not need to be the one. He did not need to be part of it at all because he bought the damn presidency. If it had not been for his almost $300 million that he kicked in to Trump's campaign, Trump would not have won. Trump only won by 1.6% over Kamala Harris. And that is why. I will never believe anything other than that.
Okay.
And that's really what it sticks in my craw is he has become the stereotypical comic book villain. He went from who we thought was going to be our Tony Stark, our Iron Man.
Oh, we were talking about Musk?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I had Trump as the villain. I was like, yeah.
Well, he is a villain, but no, Musk was always like, he was like.
Yeah, I was kind of secretly in the back of my mind going, that's really Tony.
Yeah. Yeah. And then over the last several years, we realized, no, he's Dr. Doom. So
I don't think the same thing. A lot of what I've seen lately is not worthy of praise, but
mm-hmm.
I think he just wants to go to Mars.
He's not a smart guy.
What's that got to do with it?
Everybody looks at him like he's some fucking genius. He's not. He's a con man. He conned his way into Tesla. The reason why SpaceX is the way it is because of the actual engineers that understand how rockets work. He doesn't. So,
okay.
Yeah. He's just as much a con man as Trump is.
I have seen cracks in the facade,
mm-hmm.
you know, starting late last year. But I don't think he means harm to people.
I disagree with you on that one.
I don't think this is a tech podcast anymore.
No, I'm not. We've deviated.
No, I mean, I get it. You are welcome to have that opinion. And I can understand how you can see it that way. But I refuse to think that Elon actually wants to harm people. I think he just wants to go to Mars. And he's willing to do fucking anything to get there.
I hope he gets there.
He's not.
I mean, I would really love for him to go to Mars because he would never come back.
He's not going. Because by the time we're sending humans regularly to Mars, his now 15 children will be the perfect age to become astronauts.
Yeah.
He's making future Martians right now. I think that's why he's having so many kids. And I could be deluded. He could just be, whoops, all over the place. But I think...
I think he definitely whoops.
he wants to populate the Earth. I don't know why. There's too many people already.
Not according to the conservative Christians, but anyway. So let's get back on the tech. I mean, it was adjacent because, well... He's tech. World's first pods that convert aircraft wind into energy have been installed at a U.S. airport. Now, I thought this was interesting. So there's a company called Jet Wind Power Corporation, and they've installed the world's first energy capturing pods known as ECPs at Dallas Love Field Airport. Love Field. Is designed to convert wind generated by the aircraft into renewable energy. After 3 years of testing, 5 pods are now operational. They have a total of 13 planned. The system captures jet blasts that would otherwise be wasted, helping to power the airport and reduce strain on Texas's energy grid, because we know it's crap. Since November 2024, 2 ECP-powered charging stations at the airport have logged around 10,000 uses. The project has attracted global attention from countries like Australia, Brazil, and France, with JetWind aiming for international expansion this year. Pods are also designed to work in other transport sectors, including heliports, trains, and roadways with potential military applications. City leaders see the project as a model for sustainable infrastructure, positioning Dallas as a leader in renewable energy innovation while helping meet rising power demands. Something so simple. So you basically take the wind coming out of the jet engines.
Which is quite a bit of energy.
Yeah, capture that and then convert it into actual energy.
Spin up a turbine. Yeah,
yeah, basically.
What? How are we not doing this yet?
I don't know.
This doesn't seem like anything groundbreaking. It's like like decades ago, they put machines out in the ocean to capture energy from the waves.
Yeah.
How is this?
Yeah. But nobody's ever done this before.
That's the thing. Nobody thought about it. Somebody probably thought about it.
Yeah. Probably thought about
it. Nobody did anything. They're like me. Like me.
Yeah. Oh, this would be a great idea. You got the funding? Nope.
Yeah. Oh, wouldn't it be cool? And then 2 years later, the fucking thing exists.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And somebody's a gazillionaire because of it.
Yeah.
Because
they got off their ass. Was there anything in there that said how many kilowatt hours they've produced?
Not that I saw. Mm. No.
I'd like to see the thing work. Like, does it pop out of the ground as the jet's taken off and then go back in the ground for the new arrival on that runway? It would be interesting to see.
This article is from a site called Interesting Engineering. Okay. They literally look like the little spinny, like sunflower, like things that you can put like in a garden or what have you. They look like those. They're in a cage. And the picture that they show here is there's like four of them and they,
okay. I'm sure they did testing.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's going to be, if it's capturing the jet blast, effectively, that's a lot coming in. They're going to be spinning fast. So I guess they would need a thin blade like that.
Yeah. I was trying to see if the article actually said anything about how much they actually, but apparently not. All right. So we had the launch of the Apple iPhone 16e.
Is that what all the hullabaloo was about?
Yeah. It's the replacement for the SE models. Yeah. Now, that's not what this article is specifically about, but it has something to do with it because of the new chip that they've got in, the new modem that they've got in it. But yeah, the 16E is a replacement for the SE. But the problem is the price. It starts at $599, so it's no longer considered an economy or a budget phone, whereas the SE started at like $425 or $399 or something like that. I had an SE 2020 model, loved it. And then I upgraded to a 13. And then of course, now I got a 16 Pro. They did some kind of funky thing with the single camera in it that's supposed to be almost as good as the three cameras that are in the Pro and all this other kind of crap. But I personally don't see a market for it. And even I watched Marques Brownlee, MKBHD. Mm-hmm. He did his review on it. And he's like, I don't see where this was needed, you know, basically. So,
I don't know.
Not entirely sure. I mean,
given the cost or the price of the iPhone 16, you know, not Pro, not the Max.
Yeah.
How much is that?
About $200 more, I think. And you get more features.
Yeah. But I was just thinking how much of an economy phone is it at $599, given that I paid $1,200 for my phone, I think.
Yeah, I think
So compared to the one I got, $599 is a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But, and of course, you know, the dollar is the new dime. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's also missing, like, it doesn't have MagSafe, but you can cheat by getting a case that actually has the magnet in it.
Yeah.
But they decided not to put MagSafe in it for some reason.
This is like 1.5 cents more per unit.
Probably. And I tell you, because of the charging station that I have, I love MagSafe because I've got one of the Belkin ones. It's got the watch charger.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the phone thing so that I put my phone horizontally. So then it has the time on it.
Yeah.
And then the base of it charges my AirPods.
Hmm.
So I forget how much it was, but.
That's fancy. Is that over in the main house?
That's in the main house. Yes. on the less than 1 acre estate.
Hmm.
So the one thing that they did do is Apple has developed their own modem. They're calling it the C1. It's their first in-house modem. And it says, so while this new modem might not seem groundbreaking at first, the C1 brings two major improvements that directly benefit users. The first is better battery life. The C1 is the most power-efficient modem Apple has ever put in an iPhone. They normally use Qualcomm modems. helping reduce the heavy battery drain caused by 5G use. This, by the way, this was developed off of the technology that they spent, I forget how many billions of dollars, buying off of Intel when Intel used to make these cellular modems. Mm. So it says, thanks to this efficiency, the iPhone 16e delivers nearly 20% better battery performance than even the higher-end iPhone 16. This improvement also paves the way for future ultra-thin devices like the upcoming iPhone 17 Air. People keep thinking there's going to be a 17 Air, which can maintain strong battery life despite a slimmer design. The second key feature is smarter data handling. Since the C1 is fully integrated with iOS, it can prioritize the most important data in real time, especially in congested network conditions. So unlike the previous Qualcomm modems, which couldn't distinguish between different types of data, the C1 can ensure that time-sensitive tasks like video calls or app usage are prioritized, leading to a more responsive experience for users. So they're thinking that these two upgrades are just the beginning of Apple's plans for its modem technology. Future versions like the C2 and the C3 expected in the coming years are set to bring even more advanced features. Even though I have read that the C1 is not, well, number one, it doesn't do all the 5G, the wide spectrum. I think the top one that gives you the most bandwidth, it doesn't support that. And it's not quite as sensitive, maybe, as the Qualcomm, but it is a first gen C1. Yeah. Going into what Apple's trying to classify as a budget phone. I mean, hey, if you look at their track record with the M series processors, the Apple Silicon, that was a damn smart move. Get away from Intel. They've made some highly efficient laptops and iPads. The best laptop I've ever owned is my MacBook Air M2. That Mac Mini over there with an M2 Pro, that's impressive, you know. Even though I don't need it, I still wanted Mac Mini with an M4. But and today they released new MacBook Airs with M4s and the Mac Studios with M3 Ultras and M4 Maxes, I believe. So making their own modems, not a bad idea.
You know, it I haven't been really impressed with my MacBook, but given that it is an Intel Mac,
there's a big difference.
And given what folks are saying about running local models on the M series, I might get another one. I mean, it would probably be a MacBook Pro so I can actually do stuff with it.
I don't know. I mean, those MacBook Airs they introduced today, you can get it in a 13 and a, is it 15? 13 inch or a 15 inch, or it might be 16 inch. But I think the one I have is an 11 inch. So if I was going to upgrade, I'd probably stick with a 13 because at some point, those bigger screens just aren't as portable to me. It's like, even though it's thin, it's still lightweight. I'm like, do I need 15 inches of screen real estate? 13 or 5, 11's working. I mean, this is a 10 point something right here on this iPad.
Yeah, so. But I'm pretty sure you can squeeze gobs of memory into the MacBook Pro, maybe more in the 15 or 16 inch frame.
I mean, they're finally smart and starting out with minimum of 16 gig and all these things now instead of 8. That's because of Apple Intelligence, which is a piece of shit.
Yeah, it's lackluster.
Yeah, I'm hoping it gets better, but I think I still have it turned off on my phone. Do you use an ad blocker in a browser?
I do not, but I use my URL filtering in the security software to block ad site, ad URL.
Yep. So Google in Chrome, of course, the one that is the most popular is called uBlock Origin. And yep. I've used it for years and years and years. It's great.
It's very popular.
They have basically, they shifted over to what they call Manifest V3, which is a new extension framework. And it basically kills or cripples the original uBlock Origin. The guy that created uBlock Origin said he's not going to worry about trying to make uBlock Origin itself work with V3. He came out with uBlock Origin Lite, which basically does the same thing. It works for my needs. uBlock Origin itself had a lot of capabilities that I did not use. Mm. I just mainly wanted it to block ads. That's it.
Yeah.
I have found it very useful for some of my clients who get plagued by the pop-up that says, hey, your antivirus software has expired. You're in danger. Malware, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. You put this uBlock Origin on there, those won't pop up because that's all they are, is pop-ups and trying to, you know, trick the people, you know that, into doing some shit. But it says this change affects not only Chrome, but also other Chromium-based browsers like Edge, Opera, and Vivaldi, as they are adopting Manifest V3 as well. Many users are considering switching browsers or looking for alternative ad blockers to maintain an ad-free browsing experience. So Firefox still supports uBlock Origin, Manifest V2. Ghost Browser, never heard of it, committed to supporting uBlock Origin. Opera still supports ad blockers for now. Brave supports multiple ad blockers but has privacy concerns. Vivaldi supports Manifest V2 until June of this year. Safari has no uBlock Origin, but other ad blockers are available. Alternatives are to use the uBlock Origin Lite with reduced features, AdGuard, which is Manifest V3 compliant, Ghostery 10, Manifest V3 compliant, AdBlock Plus, which is Manifest V3 compliant, VPNs with ad blocking features like NordVPN Threat Protection and Surfshark Clean Web, or you can do Pi-hole, which is, of course, a network-wide ad block, but limited against YouTube ads. You ever use Pi-hole?
I've heard about it. Never really bothered to find out what it was.
It's one of those things where the way I understand it is I've actually got AdGuard Home running on here, but I quit using it. I basically just use Cloudflare's 1.1.1.2 and 1.0.0.2, which helps block malware and stuff like that. They've got two other ones that actually will block pornography and stuff like that. But
yeah, I've seen those.
Ain't going to be having none of that blocking of pornography on this network. But my understanding is Pi-hole works very similar to the way AdGuard does. You've got these various lists for malware and ad block and ad services and stuff. And so you set your DNS to it. And so whenever it tries to basically pull from wherever the ad's being served from, it basically is like, zeros it out, sends it to null, that kind of thing. So, but yeah, I've started using uBlock Origin Lite on most of my stuff now. And like I said, it works. I didn't need it to have all these additional lists that uBlock Origin has. And because I don't know if you've ever noticed it or not, or how often you use, say, speedtest.net for testing speeds, those ads that are on the browser will affect the speed that you get back because of the calculations that are being done in the browser. So if you, and I have tested this and seen it happen in real world, and it's worse on a lower performing computer.
Mm-hmm.
So you run the speed test and let's say you're supposed to have 500 by 500 and it comes back and it only gives you about maybe 200 by 150 or something. Block those ads, run it again, and you'll get closer to the actual speed.
Hmm.
Now, on a really beefy machine, probably doesn't affect it that much because it's able to do what it needs to with all those fucking ads going everywhere on it. So, and that's it because I doubled up the Skype one. By Skype.
Yeah. Every time I saw a show on TV where some kid was talking to their grandma in Poland or something, it was always a Skype call.
I mean, I'm sad to see it go, not because I used it, but because it's like anything on the internet. It's like that site that I sent you a couple of weeks ago that I actually got off of GOG where it was like 4 or 5 pages of just those ads.
Yeah.
And it was like, man,
were the days.
Those were the days. I mean, our technology is so much better today, but there was something about the newness and the wild, wild west of it all, of those early days of the internet. I mean, I used to hang out on Slashdot all the time.
I began to wonder a couple of weeks ago whether Slashdot still existed.
They do.
I know.
You went there?
I tied Outlook. I imported the RSS feed into Outlook.
Mm.
It's just because I used to read it every day.
I did too.
Lately, I don't know why I haven't.
I did too.
It's been years.
When I first went to work for the city of Tifton, for CityNet, network manager, And this was before we turned up the internet. This was probably like a month before or a couple of weeks. And at the time, Thomasville, who was doing the same thing, but they were doing it for Thomasville, Cairo, and Camilla.
CNS.
Yeah, CNS. Yeah. So I went down there to meet with Marvin Golden, who was basically the guy that was in charge of the whole internet stuff. And we went out to the head end, and I got my first taste of what broadband over cable modem was like. Had a computer connected up to a Samsung cable modem. Those were the first ones we ever got were Samsung. The first place I went was /.org just to test it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on a 1 megabit speed profile.
Yeah.
Which was the highest they offered at the time. It was also the highest that we were going to offer. We offered the 256, 512, 768, and 1024. And that was the first place I went was /. And brought it up, and I was like, holy fuck, this is fast. Because, you know, I was accustomed to doing it on, at that time, I had dial-up and or two-way satellite. I think I had the two-way HughesNet at one point. I didn't get DSL at my place in Fitzgerald until 2004. And then it was only 768K down and 128 up. They upgraded us. Within the next 12 months, they upgraded us to 1.5 down and 384 up. And I was like, holy shit, I'm in high cotton. But to sit there and bring that up, and the first place I go is /. Which is nothing but text,
yeah.
You know? And a few graphical elements, but it was a forum. And, but yeah, I mean, every day it was like now, the first thing I do in the morning is I check my email. And it's usually on my phone. I check my email. I check into Discord, the memes channel for GOG, to see if there's anything cool there that I can share with the family. I go to, I'll check out Blue Sky. I'll check out Ground News. And I'll check out news.google.com. Those are the places I check every morning religiously. No /. I think I went to /. Once last year.
Yeah. I probably did too, and I can't even remember. I think it was just to find out if it was still up.
Yeah.
Because I've never, you don't see news articles referencing something mentioned. I haven't seen a single tweet mentioning anything from /. It's,
yeah.
I guess it's all seasoned pros over there.
And it still has the same look.
Yeah.
It still has that green.
Yeah.
Lighter shade of green, darker shade of green, the rounded corners.
Why change?
Yeah. I mean, if it works, it works. You know, I'm over there right now. Google is adding more AI overviews and a new AI mode to search. Oh, great. Europe on alert over suspected sabotage of undersea cables. Nintendo says latest legal win against piracy significant for entire games industry. Could new clocks keep airplanes safe from GPS jamming? Yeah. I mean
it's the same current thing.
Yeah, it's all current.
We're just not there.
OpenAI plots charging $20,000 a month for PhD level agents.
Yeah, I think I read a headline today about that.
Ben, are you going to pay $20,000?
Only with a guarantee.
Woo, that's crazy, man. That is crazy. All right, well, I guess that's going to wrap up the show because we're at our normal time, yeah. Believe it or not. You know, even though I was trying not to kill us with. You know, whenever we do skip a week or something, it's just like, I'm not doubling up the stories, man.
Yeah.
You know,
there's no reason.
No. And maybe one or two of these were already out of date and maybe some things have changed, but it is what it is. But if you have comments, questions, or suggestions for the show, maybe I need to put these back on so I can read this. Email address is podcast@southgeeknews.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail or send a text. And that number is 229-234-1307. We also have a members only edition of this where you get some of the things that don't make it into the main show because, well, sometimes we get a little off track, maybe talk about things we shouldn't. I don't know. $5 a month. That'll get you that. Just go to southgeeknews.com, sign up, and you'll get a special RSS feed that you can put in your podcast app of choice. That number, that text number, So that's a number I use for Tifton Media Works. That's for Tifton Talks. That's for this show and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, of course, I'm not going to out this person because all I know is their telephone number. I woke up one morning and because it emails me to the Tifton Talks account, because that's actually where the number is associated with. This person wrote a paragraph. And the best I can figure out is there's some younger person in school. And after I shared it with Lee, she came to the conclusion that this person was probably thinking that they were texting their therapist.
Mm.
And I finally had to tell them the other day because they did it again. And I told them, I said, look, I appreciate what you're going through, but this is a text line for Tifton Media Works. And they were, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. I'm like, don't be. Don't worry about it. I just wanted to let you know that you need to stop texting this number because I'm the only one receiving this if it's supposed to be going to somebody else. Because they were having family issues and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, no.
That's going to be embarrassing.
Yeah, kind of embarrassing. But anyway, yeah, so that's that number, 229-234-1307. So if you want to share, you know, your family troubles, no, not really. It's for tech stuff. Anyway, hopefully in 2 weeks we'll be back.
I don't see why not.
Oh, Lordy. We're into March. Yay. All right. We'll see you next time.
Ta-ta. Y'all,
take care. Bye. This has been a production of Tifton Media Works. Check out all our podcasts by visiting TiftonMediaWorks.com.